All right. Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Terry.
Hi, my name is Terry. I'm an alcoholic and addict. Wow. So I hear I'm supposed to talk about what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. What I used to be like. Well, what I thought was normal. Growing up, my parents had been married for 50 years. I grew up in a good home. There was no addictions in my family. You know, I always described it as the Leave It to Beaver era of my parents. Be home by the time the streetlights come on and we had dinner together. There was no abuse in my family. Everything was good. Picture perfect image all the way through my school years. And when it came to things like drinking, I remember my first time drinking when I was about 12 years old. I'd been hearing all my life everyone was, you know, it was something that only adults did. It was something that was glamorized only when you're an adult. And so that just made me want to try it more. It's like, what's the secret to alcohol? And the first time I drank alcohol at 12, I was at a friend's house, and she said, here's this big bottle of vodka. It's this white liquid. She says, it'll burn, so just take a quick chug and don't think about it. You know, hold your breath. Don't breathe afterwards. So I chugged. I took 3-4 chugs. I mean, I wouldn't stop. And then that's all I remember. The rest of the night, I don't remember anything else. What I do remember is the next morning having this horrible headache, throwing up, and thinking I had the best night of my life at 12 years old. And I don't remember a thing of it, but for some reason it resonated with me that this was something that was good. I got to do something that the adults and the big people got to do, and it was okay. But I didn't tell anybody, just my friends knew, and I got away with it. And occasionally, as I got older, I would steal from the liquor cabinet, you know, when no one was watching. But everything around my home life growing up was about image. As long as everything looks good, everything is good. And that was kind of the beginning of my double image. As long as everything looks good, everything is good. It doesn't matter about anything else. If you keep secrets and no one finds out, you're okay. You can break whatever laws, rules, whatever you want to do. As long as no one finds out, it's okay. So when I got into college, then I learned that it's okay to drink. Everyone drinks, and in fact, that's the answer to everything. You know, it makes you feel better. It loosens you up, and it's okay. It's what everyone does. It's like, oh, I had a hard day of work or school or whatever. I'm going to go get drunk. And Facebook was all about, yeah, go and get drunk. So it was great. But as I moved along, as I got older, the drinking was something that occurred more and more often. It was something that it wasn't just on Friday and Saturday nights. It was every night. It was what I looked forward to. Instead of it making me feel better, it was what I needed to get through the day. And I actually began to have this emptiness inside myself, this void that I never understood or could explain. I didn't have feelings of anything other than fear. It was a fear for a test or fear for a job interview or fear of whatever was coming at me. And but other than that, there was nothing. There was no, I didn't have any real joy. And I just figured that was just something that was not there in me. So I kept doing things to fill this void. And that was through the excitement and the thrills that I got in drinking. You know, getting away from the cops while I was drunk, or whatever I could do. And that wasn't ever enough, because it got to a point where I had to do things in my life to create stress. I started getting involved in high-risk activities, you know, jumping out of airplanes. I got into kickboxing, and my career was focused on high-octane, you know, energy, ER, and I kept pushing myself, thinking there's got to be something more. What am I missing? And with each step, my drinking supported that, the fears. It just was my outlet. At one point, when I wasn't satisfying that through my drinking, I started thinking, well, this helps, maybe this plus that'll help. And I started doing other drugs. And through my nursing career, I had a lot of access, and so I started doing other drugs. Well, after a couple years, the hospital caught on, and I had a huge investigation, but nothing ever happened. They couldn't prove anything. So I lost my job, but I had no record. I was like thinking to myself, okay, here's my second chance. You know, I've risked my life. I've done these drugs, and I'd gotten involved in this alcohol, and I'll just start clean. You know, I've got my career going. I'll start clean. So I went back to school and got my anesthesia degree. And my friends would say, you know what, just stay away from the drugs, stay away from the illegal stuff or anything that'll get you in trouble. Stick to alcohol. It's legal, it's safe, you know, it's unless you're driving, and which I was. You know, I had, it got to a point where I would be driving with one hand over my eye, or I wouldn't remember what I had done the night before. Parties were ridiculous. Getting involved with that spread to my getting involved with other people, and through my drinking I started having drinking plus affairs, and it was all okay because I was drunk. I didn't know what I was doing. I was drunk. And it got to a point where whatever I did, it turned into an addiction, but it was okay as long as I was drinking first. That was always my go-to. And whatever I did that I couldn't handle, well, I can stop, and I would, as long as I could keep drinking or as long as I could keep doing something. There was always some addiction going on, and it was most often alcohol. There were periods of time where I was sober, but it was only a short period of time. And all those periods of time eventually got shorter and shorter and shorter until there was no periods of time, and I was just drinking all the time or caught up in my addictions. I moved here a couple years ago, and when I moved here, one of the people I had gotten into an affair with followed me, and this was like my other second life person. This was that person that we would get drunk, we would, you know, get involved in our activities, and then I would come home, no one knew the difference. It was my second life. It was, as long as I continued my job and didn't get in trouble, as long as my kids were doing well, as long as my marriage was doing okay, our house is in order, then everything is okay. But the only way I could manage that is by also having this second part of my life, this image that I had, keep up the image, and then this other life is okay. And it didn't fill the void. What it did was make me forget about everything. And it drained me of all of my emotions. I had none to begin with, except for the fear. And with that gone, I was without fear. I was without anything. I was basically, I'd gotten to a point where I was working 70 hours a week. And I would work, and I would go to my affair. And we were also, with my job, we got involved in other drugs. And with that, things had gotten to a point that I was there one night at his house, 11 o'clock at night, and I had come to after we'd been doing quite a bit of everything, and kind of come out of one of my blackouts. And when that happened, I realized I'm here by myself. And nothing was right about the situation, except for the weather was amazing, and I remember how beautiful it was. But when I went and looked for this friend of mine, I couldn't find him. And I looked around the yard. I looked around the house, back around the yard. I did eventually find him in the pool at the bottom. And I jumped in, and I pulled him out by his arm, and he had probably been under there for about 30 minutes, based on what I could remember and how the events were. And so I sat there looking at him, and I knew that in this instant, my whole life was going to change. Everything, my perfect house, my perfect job, everything was going to, I would have to tell my husband. I would have my family know. My church would know. But I was at a point, because of all of my drinking, all of my lying, all of the hours that I had spent, that I wasn't losing anything. I was so dead inside. I was just functioning from day to day. That when I saw that, even though I had this fear, I had a greater sense of relief that it's going to come out, but I'm so glad it's over. Days before, I prayed to God, and, you know, I prayed all the time. All the time I was praying, help me quit this. Help me stop this. Why can't I stop it? And there was nothing, no answer, nothing. And I couldn't figure out why. I was reading the Bible hours a day, nothing. I'm like, okay, well, people just say, keep reading, you'll figure it out. I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't get answers. And so I was like, so before this incident happened, a couple weeks or days, I was sitting there and we were drinking and doing our drugs, and I just thought to myself, God, you're going to have to end this because I can't. I'll never end it. I will do this until the day I die. And it was like, I think that was my bottom. That was my point of giving up. I wasn't going to try anymore. I wasn't going to tell anybody. And I didn't see any hope. So when I saw him at the pool, I knew that was God's answer to my prayer. And I called 911, did CPR, paramedics came. I went to the police station and sat through about 3.5 hours of interrogation while they did blood samples and did mouth swabs. And I didn't hear anything else about that. The next day, my boss called me. He says, we need to talk to you. And while I was at the police station, I also had to call my husband and say, you need to pick me up where I was at tonight. And also, so it wasn't just my career and my life. It was my husband and my family was everything found out. So I had my husband take me to my boss, and he says, would you test positive for any of these drugs? And I said, yes. And he says, you need to go into this diversion program. And it's a rehabilitation program for people in the medical field. And so I did, to save my license, because that's all I knew. And I ended up having to spend 6 weeks inpatient. The drugs I was using, they weren't familiar with. So I couldn't go to any of the facilities around this area because they didn't know how to treat me for it. So I finally found a place in Arizona, and I went there. And when I went there, they said, what's your story? I said, I don't have a story. My family's perfect. My life is perfect. I'm just messed up. It's just me. I'm not an addict. I'm not an alcoholic. I made some mistakes, and my friend got in the pool, and that's all I saw. I'm not the person on the street. I'm not the person that's homeless. Everything looks good. Don't you see that? And that's all I could see, was that everything looks okay. There was just an accident, and I ignored the fact that I had already been, investigated 10 years prior. I ignored the fact that I was driving with one hand over my eye all the time, ignored the fact that I was shooting up with my kids in the back seat. Doing all of this stuff, I never saw it, because when I did it, it went away in this nice little box. And that's the hidden part that no one ever knows. And even myself, I forgot about it. All I could see was what everybody else saw. My lies were so devious. They were so real to me that that's all I could remember. And it wasn't until I started coming to meetings and I heard people telling their stories that I started remembering my stories. Because my whole life, I trained myself, if you don't remember it, if you blacked out, it didn't happen. And you're okay. You're not a bad person, because that was when you were drunk. And but I did remember. And I even lied to myself at first. I said, no, that didn't happen to me. I was never arrested. No, I was just investigated by the DEA in Virginia because of all the drugs I took for 2 years. And I've just nearly put, so many people's lives at risk every time I drive home. But I'm not that person. So that's what it was like. 8 months later, I continued going to meetings, and they showed me. They, you know, through my life, I never had a connection with my family. My growing up, my life wasn't perfect. My parents taught me how to be quiet. My parents taught me how to put on a good image and do what you're supposed to do. Don't talk about your problems. Don't show your emotions. Suck it up and move on. And so that's what I did. And I got a sponsor, and I started talking with her, and she's been fantastic. She's walked me through so many of my crises. 8 months later, I get a call from my lawyer, and she says, by the way, there's a warrant out for your arrest. You're going to have to turn yourself in tomorrow. Got myself together. I went in, and there was a warrant out. She said, whatever you do, don't get a ticket, because they'll arrest you on the spot. And I went in, and I got what I wanted. You know, I'm now a convict, you know. I got my first arrest. I got to spend the night in jail. I got the strip search. I got the whole gamut. They got the pictures. You can look my name up, and you'll see me on I was on Fox News. And beautiful full-size profile shot. Told my whole family about it. People, everyone I knew in across country in Virginia were all of a sudden texting me and emailing me. I heard something. What is this? What's going on? And they were charging me initially with involuntary manslaughter for my friend's death. And I was like, oh, well, you know what? I didn't make him get in the pool. It's not my fault. I'm going to fight it. And I did. I fought it as hard as I could. But the DA had different opinions. This has all been resolved, so I can talk about it. But not with the ending that you would think. They started pushing things like second-degree murder and aggravated assault. They said that you killed him, and they're saying that you had premeditated it. They were trying to say that it was a Michael Jackson thing. You know, they were coming up with all these scenarios, these fantastic scenarios of plots, and they started involving my family. They attacked his career, and they started, you know, my lawyer was like, okay, well, when we go to trial, it's going to be over $100,000, you know, but we can win this because this, that, and the other. And after doing this for about four to six months, I don't know how long it was, the last hearing, I just kind of broke down. I said, I can't do this, you know, because once they said second degree, they said, but you'll spend that time for the next 2 years in jail while we clear your name. So I'm still going to be sitting in jail while we clear my name, but I can get my name cleared. Your money will be gone and your family will be destroyed, and we're going to tear everything up on stand. So I said no. I pleaded down to no contest for involuntary manslaughter. So that's where I stand right now with my legal situation. But the thing that's different for me now than a year ago was, a year ago I was losing my career. I was losing my family. I had already lost my spirit. There was nothing left in me. And in this last year, I have learned about connecting with my higher power, and in a way that I had never experienced before. It's a spiritual connection, and that when I talk to him, he listens. I see how he's protected my family, how he's protected me through my whole life. I see his protection all around me, and through a lot of talking, I've learned how to reconnect with myself in ways that I never understood that was even possible. It's okay to get mad. It's okay to tell people when you're not having a good day. It's okay to feel these things. What you feel is what you feel. How you behave and how you respond to it is what needs to be changed. And I was responding to everything in my life like an addict, and I never saw it. It's like if anything happened, I would jump at the chance to fix it, to stop it. It has to be now. There was no wait and patience. I didn't know the term. That's why I was always looking and restless and having to do something. More drugs, more alcohol, more career, more this. It was just never enough because I'm not patient. I got to have results. I got to have change. I got to have it now. Through recovery, I haven't been able to work. I haven't been able to find a job. I'm a convicted felon now. I have a license I owe $40,000 on, and I have nothing I can use. I'm not even allowed to use it because of everything that's going on. But I'm not that person anymore. I'm not the anesthesia person. I'm not that image. I'm not that thing that walks in and says, oh, there's the soccer mom with the great kids and the great family, and oh my gosh, she's so smart. And no, I'm not that. Not that at all. I'm Terry. Nothing more, nothing less. If you don't like what you see, well, then that's your problem, and it's none of my business what you think. All I care about is what I think. And my God loves me. You know, I have a personal relationship with my Savior, Jesus, and that is all I need. He loves me. My family, we're growing strong together, recovering together. It's so hard. And the recovery together is making us stronger, and it's bringing us together. And it's because I keep coming to these meetings, I keep seeing my story over and over, and I don't forget about it. I listened to things that I thought I had forgotten or I thought I had never did, and I realized I've done it all. I'm on my fourth step for the last year, doing my inventory endlessly, and just when I think I'm done, I get another list of things I get to do an inventory on, and that's because that's where I need to be. I need to look at what... For the first time, I need to look at myself and stop looking at what other people see, but look at what I know about myself. And going through those steps is what's saving my life. Talking to my sponsor is saving my life. Coming to meetings is keeping me on track. Not one thing affects me, but everything keeps me on track. And now I'm at a point where... When something isn't right, I know that it's not right because I start getting stressed. I start having issues, and that means my mind is kind of going astray, okay? Sometimes I sit with it because I'm just learning how to deal with all these new emotions. Sometimes I call my sponsor. Sometimes I just go to a meeting, and somebody will tell me my answer without even knowing what my question is. Sometimes I talk to my husband, but the point is, for the first time, I'm reaching out. I'm asking, I'm talking, and it's been incredible. So I'm so grateful to AA for their being there, because I never knew they were there, and I felt like they found me. I felt like I was dumped into it, but it's what saved my life. Going through these steps, having the people to talk to. In 2 weeks, I go for a sentencing. Okay, I might end up in jail for a couple years. I'm not scared. I'm not. I'm honestly not. I was for a while, for the longest time. I was scared, and I'm not. If I go in jail, that's where God wants me. And I feel like that one day I was in jail, oh my gosh, one day, was huge. I was sitting there talking AA to everybody in my cell. I had my own little therapy session, and I was like, I can just see that would be exactly what I would do, is I would go there and I would be talking about therapy. I'd be talking about my higher power. I'd be talking AA and all of the steps, and I would bring all my literature with me, and I would know that that's where God wants me, because I've experienced two sides of a coin, and I would much rather be on this side of the coin. I would not give up one thing that I did, because I would not be where I'm at if I didn't go through all of those trials. I would never have understood what it's like to connect or to have faith or trust in something greater than myself, because even though I tried, I wasn't ready to give up my own will. I was still trying to direct it myself, but I would ask God for permission once in a while. Well, that's why he wasn't answering, because I wasn't listening. He was telling me what to do. I had to completely surrender and give up my will and start listening for the first time. And when I did that, the music started, and I had to listen to people that I thought I would never listen to, and I would never have been ready to listen to had I not gotten to the point I had, where my career was taken away because I'm not my career. My family had to be threatened because I had to know what I was risking. My church, because it's not about my image. It's not about how good I look or how righteous I seem. It's about what I know about myself and being honest with myself being honest. Being brutally honest was, I think, one of the hardest things. I've never told the truth. I think since I was born lying. And it was just make sure everyone's happy, everyone believes you, and everyone's smiling, and it's okay. And so it's hard. And before I speak, I have to say a prayer. God, watch my tongue, because I'm going to lie. They're going to say, how are you? And I'm going to say, I'm great. And I've done this and that, and I may not be great. That's a lie. Stop it. Because that right there is going to lead me down the wrong path. That's going to turn me down the way I don't want to be anymore. So I'm thankful for being here, and I'm thankful for everybody. That's all I have to say.